just standing there. And I thought I was only dreaming, yeah. I kissed you then, and then once again.
This is Dr. Daniels, and welcome to Healing with Dr. Daniels. And it is Sunday, November 20th, 8 p.m. Eastern Time. November 20th or 21st? 20th. All right, tonight's topic is, could prenatal care increase infant and maternal mortality? What is a mother to do? This is actually shocking, and I was really motivated to do this topic tonight because there's just an incredible blizzard of emails your doctor is getting extolling the dangers of prenatal care, all but telling doctors to cease and desist. But why should you be the last to know? So tonight, I'm sharing with you the view of prenatal care from your doctor's inbox. Yes, from your doctor's inbox. And let's just start with the ritual that all mothers go through. Prenatal ultrasound tied to autism. How about that? Yep, prenatal ultrasound. It means those pretty pictures you take of your baby so you can start the baby album early. Yep. And it says, early prenatal diagnostic ultrasound has been linked to symptoms of autism spectrum disorder in children with specific genetic vulnerabilities. And, like, who hasn't got genetic vulnerabilities as part of being human? So these results add weight to ongoing concerns expressed by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, FDA of all people, about the non-medical use of diagnostic ultrasound during pregnancy. Now, this is interesting because some of you out there are old enough to remember the good old days when people used to get their hands and feet x-rayed at the fair. This was considered to be, fun, interesting. And we're finding the same thing with ultrasound. So apparently getting an ultrasound when you're pregnant is not totally harmless. And, of course, the earlier you get it, the worse it is. Okay, so there is some experimental evidence that exposure to ultrasound early in gestation could alter brain development and behavior. In a retrospective study of a national study of children with autism spectrum disorder, the researchers looked for a possible relationship between the severity of the disorder and symptoms and ultrasound exposure during the first trimester of pregnancy in offspring with a genetic predisposition of autism. Now, we know, just between you and me and the lamppost, that autism is not genetic. How do we know this? Well, we know this because the frequency of autism has gone from 1 in 12,000 back in the 80s to 1 in 65. And so since the genetic makeup of the population has not changed substantially, then we know it's not genetic. Okay, so for the group as a whole, exposure to first trimester ultrasound in comparison with no exposure was related to lower observed social affective symptoms, but greater parent-reported and repetitive behaviors, the authors report. So what they're saying is that when you get an ultrasound in the first trimester of pregnancy, it increases your child's susceptibility to autism. So now the ultrasound may make the child more susceptible, and then, of course, you have the final dagger, which would be the immunization. And so the study was supported by the National Institutes of Health, and the authors have no relevant financial relationships. But this is shocking. So this is something, first trimester ultrasound, something every doctor generally orders, even though first trimester ultrasounds are absolutely, totally, completely useless. Useless. Now, we were taught in medical school that you could do a first trimester ultrasound for dates. However, there's three ways to determine the date or how old the baby is in the uterus. One is when the lady says, what's her last period? So you say, Miss Jones, when was your last menstrual period? What date did it begin? And she'll give you her best guess. The next method is a doctor can do a pelvic exam and just kind of guess, how big is the uterus? And the third method is the ultrasound in the first trimester. The first trimester ultrasound is the least accurate of those three methods. It is the least accurate and the most costly and the most dangerous. And so the American College of Obstetrics and Gynecology has gone so far as to state that routine ultrasounds in the first trimester should not be given. And so there is no such thing as a routine ultrasound in the first trimester. It's not very useful. Yet, women are getting multiple ultrasounds in the first trimester. And so, of course, as always, there's no causal link, just an association. But there you have it. So what cautious mother would even get an ultrasound in the first trimester if she knows it can make autism more severe? But doesn't stop there. And so when I was in medical school, I said to my professors, because we're doing this prenatal care thing, right? And I couldn't figure out, golly geez, Dr. Senior, we're gathering all this data, you know, we're measuring this, we're measuring that, to having a lady show up every month, she's got to piss in a cup, we check her blood pressure, we do this, we do that. What do we do with all this information? And I asked that question on more than one occasion. Of course, the first two times I asked, I got like a really vague answer. And so I scratched my head and said, well, geez, why bother? And then finally I got the big answer. The big answer was, so we can determine when to do a C-section. So if we have to deliver the baby early, you know, we have all this information we can use to help us out. And later on, if we need to do a C-section, we can figure out who needs one and who doesn't. We can sort these ladies. I said, okay, all right, gotcha. So here we have it. New study, Medscape, Family Medicine, and this is November 19th. Pre-labor ruptured membranes is best managed expectantly. So you need the English translation. Pre-labor means the lady's not in labor. Ruptured membranes means the sac around the baby has broken and liquid is coming out. Best managed means what the doctor should do. Expectantly means the doctor should do nothing and just wait. So this is a condition for which ladies have been getting C-sections if the membranes were ruptured for, say, more than 24 hours. And she didn't go into labor. So here we are. This is straight from New York, where there's lots of pregnant ladies. So in pregnant women who present with pre-labor ruptured membranes, PROM, close to term, expectant management with surveillance of maternal and fetal well-being should be preferred over immediate delivery. Immediate delivery, of course, is C-section. The only way to immediately deliver a baby from a lady who is not in labor and not having contractions is to do a C-section. And so this was done because it was believed that the baby would surely get infected and then mom would die and baby would die and, oh, my God, so we've got to do this C-section right now. And as they say, it has been widely assumed. It's assumed. That means with no evidence, no proof. And this is the 50% of stuff taught in medical school, which is now being found to be false. And we're seeing a pattern with these things that are found to be false is they're all based on assumption. So very little, actually, of what's taught in medical school is based on any kind of fact, observation, or scientific evidence. This is a shock. Of course, when I was a medical student, it never occurred to me that they were educating me based on, well, really rumor. And so it has been widely assumed. Well, assumed by who? They're suggesting that lay people are making this assumption, untrained people. No, it had been widely assumed by doctors that prolonging pregnancy in women with late preterm rupture of membranes is associated with a risk of neonatal infection. However, the results of this trial showed that the absolute risk of neonatal infection was low, and the risk was not different in the infants of women who were given immediate delivery or who were delivered later if they failed to go into labor or if they got a fever. More surprisingly, the infants of the mothers who got immediate delivery were more likely to have a range of complications, including respiratory distress and need for artificial ventilation. Now, respiratory distress is a common complication of cesarean section delivery because the baby inside the mother has a lung full, or both lungs full of water. And because the baby's chest is not squeezed during the birth process, expelling the water, babies born by cesarean section are born with lungs full of water. And so, of course, it's common for them to have respiratory distress. Of course, this is presented with as if respiratory distress was an unexpected or sporadic complication of C-section. It's not. It's a rather routine event. So premature rupture of membrane occurs in 20% of all births and 40% of preterm births. Immediate delivery for premature rupture of membranes at term is associated with better outcomes, whereas the optimal management of women with preterm rupture of membranes before 37 weeks is not clear. So in other words, if a lady's baby is mature and ready to be born, then it's okay to do a C-section. They say there's better outcomes. But the optimal management of women with preterm rupture membranes before 37 weeks is not clear. Okay. So I took a look at this as 65 centers, 11 countries, randomly assigned 1,839 women to immediate delivery or expectant management. So immediate delivery is cesarean section. And they use this euphemism to not alarm, basically, a parent. Women assigned to expectant management were more likely to deliver after spontaneous onset of labor and at a later gestation. That means these babies who were a little bit early now had another day or two or three in the womb, which makes a big difference in the intelligence and health of a baby when the baby is before 37 weeks. Every hour counts. And so the incidence of definite or probable neonatal sepsis, which is the primary outcome, did not differ between the two groups. So it was 3% in the ones that waited and 2% in the ones that had the immediate C-sections. The groups did not differ in the measure of neonatal morbidity, that means damage and harm, and mortality, that means death. Neonates born after immediate delivery had lower birth weight, more respiratory distress, and greater risk of needing a ventilator, and spent more time in the neonatal intensive care unit or special care nurseries. So these babies that were treated by immediate C-section generated a lot more revenue for the hospitals. We have to, you know, say that. So immediate delivery cut the likelihood of hemorrhage and fever, but increase the risk of cesarean section, and researchers found. All right, so obviously you can't, like I said, immediately deliver somebody by any means, really, other than a C-section. I guess what they're suggesting is some of these ladies responded to induced labor. And so what this study showed, if the lady is carrying a single fetus between 34 and 36 weeks and 6 days gestation, then there's no reason that you can't just twiddle your thumbs and wait and see how things turn out. And so therefore, in contrast to recent guideline recommendations, we advocate that expectant management is preferred to immediate delivery. Now, the big deal here is that the standard of care, which is basically immediate delivery, produces a baby that's more damaged, spends more time in the neonatal intensive care unit, and costs a heck of a lot more money, but does not improve outcomes. So from the mother's point of view, this standard of care of doing immediate C-sections is actually not a good idea. Either is it from the baby's point of view. It just so happens, just by the way, that insurance companies would rather they wait too, because then you have fewer C-sections and less money paid out to hospitals. But the deal here is it's a piece of standard of care here which is not good for mother or babies. And we have another study which shows vaginal births are safer than cesarean. The CDC report reaffirms. This is truly shocking that this information would be shared with doctors so bluntly. But cesarean delivery carries higher risk for women than vaginal birth, according to new data from CDC. In other words, if you're a woman and you're pregnant, your chances of dying are much higher with a cesarean delivery than with a vaginal birth. So blood transfusions and admission to the intensive care unit are more common after first-time cesarean deliveries than after vaginal deliveries or repeat cesarean deliveries. Report also shows that after a first cesarean delivery, 90% of women have a second cesarean delivery. So I was one of those women, my first cesarean delivery, where it was a pretty rocky road. 16 days in the hospital, a C-section which turned out to be unnecessary, but was also botched, second surgery to handle the complications of the first surgery, and just really downhill from there. But it was such an awful experience that I decided for my next pregnancy that I was going to have the baby at home. I just was not going to go to the hospital and subject myself to whatever it was they had in store for me. All right. So the National Center for Health Statistics in Hyattsville, Maryland, and colleagues reviewed data on maternal morbidity noted in birth certificates from births that occurred in 2013 and in 41 states, as well as Washington, D.C., and the data represent 90% of all births in the United States that year. The authors focus on four maternal morbidities associated with labor and delivery: maternal transfusion, ruptured uterus, ouch, unplanned hysterectomy, oh boy, and intensive care unit admission, oh dear. Now, just for your information, intensive care unit admission carries with it a 15.6% death rate. Not good. So maternal transfusion was the most common of the four at a rate of 280 per 100,000, followed by ICU admission, 154 per 100,000. We'll find out more when we get back.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AROutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magpul clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AROutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AROutfitting.com.
All loans subject to lender approval must be in business 1 year and have $100,000 in annual revenue. If your goal is to take your small business to the next level, there's something you're going to need above all else. Money. Fortunately, we're talking with someone who's no stranger to helping small businesses. Barbara Corcoran from TV Shark Tank.
Listen, all companies need capital, and when it comes to capital, no one knows small business like OnDeck. OnDeck has delivered over $5 billion in loans, and having earned an A-plus rating from the Better Business Bureau, it's no wonder why 9 out of 10 customers would recommend OnDeck to a friend. There's no obligation, and you could receive a loan decision in minutes and funding in as fast as one business day. Over 50,000 small businesses have already received the loans they needed, and so could you.
Speak with our U.S.-based loan specialists and find out how much you qualify for now at OnDeckLending.com or call 800-293-5565. That's 800-293-5565. 800-293-5565.
We are the American Freedom Party. This is the most urgent time in the history of Western civilization. In the year 1900, white people of European descent comprised 35% of the world population. Today it is less than 9% and falling fast. Europe is being overrun with Middle Eastern immigrants, and America's founding stock is rapidly being replaced with third world peoples from around the globe. For the last 50 years, every influential institution in this nation, our schools and universities, our media, our churches and our employers, have promoted policies and principles that teach whites to be ashamed of their great heritage and birthright. We, who in the 1950s, the 1960s, and 1970s were the world's dominant force, are now so afraid of being called racist that we were quailing towards irrelevance and extinction. Join the American Freedom Party today. Reach us at theamericanfreedomparty.us or call us at 701-317-5317. Paid for by the American Freedom Party.
Give such delight. We all leave before morning light.
Hi, this is Dr. Daniels, and welcome back to Healing with Dr. Daniels. Okay, so we're talking about cesarean sections and complications for the mother. Obviously, the way to get a C-section is, of course, to get prenatal care. You can't get a C-section without showing up at the hospital. So what we're looking at is just the rate of complications. So the transfusions, 280 per 100,000. Intensive care unit admission, 154 per 100,000. Unplanned hysterectomy, ouch, 40 per 100,000. And ruptured uterus, 26 per 100,000. And so women having vaginal deliveries with no prior C-section had the lowest rate of all four maternal morbidities. So women having vaginal deliveries with no prior C-section had the lowest rate of complications. So a woman with first cesarean delivery had the highest rate of transfusions. And higher rates of maternal morbidity, that means severe damage and harm, for cesarean compared with vaginal deliveries were found for nearly all maternal age groups. And for women of all races or ethnic groups. So in other words, it doesn't matter how old you are. It doesn't matter whether you're black, white, yellow, orange, whatever color you seem to appear in the mirror. A cesarean section is always more dangerous than a vaginal delivery. Now, this is something that women are just simply not told. Like when I was in medical school, even us doctors were given the impression somehow that C-sections were easy beans, no risk. And even when I was pregnant with my first one, I was thinking, geez, maybe I should just get a C-section, you know, and not go through all that labor. But really, going through the labor, if you want to call it that, it produces a much healthier baby and it's much safer for the mother. And they also noted that their findings on intensive care unit admission, this study, were actually new. So there's no other U.S. study available that examines this specifically by method of delivery in previous cesarean section. And so maternal damage is rare but important, and maternal health issues are difficult to examine with most sample surveys. So women die, if you have a vaginal delivery, with a frequency of 3 per 25,000. And that is a pretty low rate. And even though that rate appears to be low, it's actually higher than it had been. In other words, with the advent of prenatal care, the death of mothers in pregnancy has increased sixfold. So there can be no argument that prenatal care and hospital delivery is safer for the mother, or has been safer over the years. So people who have questions can go to my chat room, which is, let's see, here it is, healingwithdrdaniels.chatango.com. So people can enter the chat room at healingwithdrdaniels.chatango.com. And people who have email questions can join my office hours, which are monthly. And for information on that, you can go to vitalitycapsules.com. And first thing you want to do, of course, is sign up for your free report, the Candida Cleaner version 2.0, which has been updated. And then once you sign up for that, you'll get to the regular website and you can click on office hours. And that would be a place where you could sign up. Okay. All right. So vaginal birth, no doubt about it, safer. So wait, what about the death rate, maternal death rate with C-section? 13 per 100,000. Ouch. That's a lot of death when you compare it with 3 per 100,000. And remember, those are real deaths. People actually, drop dead. Okay, and here's something else. Doctors often give their pregnant mothers advice about what drugs would be safe during pregnancy. Yeah. And so a lot of times mothers will say, well, what should I take in pregnancy? And when we come back, we'll find out.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Extendivite is more than just a heart tonic. Most basic diseases are caused by yeast in the gut and metals in the liver, and we all have a bit of both. The garlic in Extendivite has a yeast-killing effect in the gut while also helping the sulfur enzyme in the liver get rid of the metals. Extendivite just may improve your overall health. Products like Extendivite are the only way we are going to get our society healthy. And if you're waiting for the government and pharmaceutical care to solve your health problems, you're going to have a long, disappointing wait, I think. Extendivite is a complete formula for extended life in the new millennium. 80 can be the new 60. Extendivite is available in capsule or liquid form for just $69.95 for a 2-month supply. To get started, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite. You, your husband, your wife, your children, we all need food. And with dozens of food storage companies buying up airtime all over radio, it's hard for you to know which company you can actually trust. Hey folks, John Stettmiller here. We at RBN understand, which is why I personally searched out a storable food company and one with similar core values to us here at RBN and of course you, the listener. Well, I found such a company. I'd like to introduce you to Numana Food Storage. Numana Food Storage, highly nutritious, GMO-free, contains no aspartame, no high fructose corn syrup, has no chemical preservatives or soy, and Numana Food Storage has a 25-year shelf life. To back up my claims, we've made Numana Food Storage the exclusive food sponsor of RBN. Call 888-597-0775, 888-597-0775. Order online at NumanaRepublic.com. That's NumanaRepublic.com. Food storage you'll love to eat.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Only a fool would go to a plumber for brain surgery. But otherwise intelligent people use internet searches to find such gems as Lee Harvey Oswald killed JFK with 3 shots from the rear and 1 shot from the front. They get similar financial guidance when they are investigating cryptocurrencies. RBN listeners know that American currency has not been lawful money for nearly 50 years. Since the thieves at the Fed stole the silver out of the coins and began reneging on redeemable notes in 1968. Now that the dollar has just about inflated totally away and banks want reverse interest to keep your books, the high-tech world has brought you an alternative. What if you could buy, sell, and trade with fellow business people from your home with zero bank fees? If you believe banking tyranny must end, then join the digital currency movement now. Call investigative journalist Pat Shannon at 601-212-0911.
This is Dr. Daniels, and welcome back to Healing with Dr. Daniels. Okay, about half hour, we'll be taking questions, and our call-in number will be, or is, 800-313-9443, 800-313-9443, and of course, we have a nice chat going at healingwithdrdaniels.chatango.com. Okay. So, vaginal delivery is way safer at deaths of 3 per 100,000 compared to 13 per 100,000. So, increase your chance of death by at least fourfold just by having a C-section. And what else is there? Well, does Tylenol in pregnancy cause ADHD and autism? This is very interesting. One thing women getting prenatal care have a tendency to ask their doctors is, what is it safe for me to take when I'm pregnant? What can I take for pain? Because, well, many pregnant ladies have, well, aches and pains of some sort or another. And just to give you a little background, when I was in medical school, that would be 1979 to 83, it was then discovered that aspirin was totally unsafe for mothers and for babies. So aspirin, of course, would increase a woman's chances of bleeding during pregnancy or during delivery. And aspirin given to a child after immunization was associated with an increase in Reye's syndrome, which is a syndrome where the child's liver basically explodes and the kid dies. And so aspirin was determined to be not safe for mother or child. And so, of course, we doctors recommended Tylenol, of course, for mothers and, of course, for babies. Well, so here we have, again, it's hit your doctor's inbox. Just here in November. And it says, does Tylenol in pregnancy cause ADHD and autism? Now, it's called paracetamol in every country except the United States, by the way. It says, yet another study about something that women take or don't take in pregnancy that may or may not cause adverse effects on their offspring, physical or mental health. And it says, the mass media love these scare stories. And so, as pediatricians, we need to understand what's behind the headlines when worried mothers ask us. Okay, so this is immediately diminishing, making light of any relationship that might exist between Tylenol, ADHD, and autism. And they go on to say that overall, 40% of mothers reported using Tylenol at some stage in pregnancy. The possible effects on their offspring varied by gender. For boys, any Tylenol exposure was associated with higher autism scores, suggesting a problem. But this was not seen in girls. For both genders, Tylenol exposure was associated with increased hyperactivity, impulsivity symptoms, basically a 40% increase, and higher scores on the basically poor behavior and mental function, poor mental function tests at about 5 years. Well, this is pretty outrageous. So if a mom takes Tylenol while she's pregnant, then a kid's going to be a little bit stupid for at least 5 years. The difference for the ADHD scores were not as significant. Actual doses taken were not reported. Tendency for higher scores in children whose mothers had taken Tylenol in all three trimesters rather than just one. The mothers who took Tylenol differed significantly from those who did not in a number of ways. For example, they were more likely to smoke and to report having a chronic illness. Now, in these days where one in 67 kids is autistic, I dare say many women, if they knew of the association between Tylenol and increase in a child's, let's say, diminished mental capacity, I dare say many of them would not take the Tylenol. They would say, you know what, I'm going to hold off on that. And, of course, the pediatricians who wrote this article think that's overreacting, even though in the article they say, well, you know, it does seem to be an association. Another thing that mothers are not told is Tylenol, which mothers frequently give their children after their vaccinations, is associated with death. In other words, kids die from the Tylenol. And it's been mainly a function of dosing, concentration, packaging, and labeling. And again, if mothers realized that as dangerous as immunizations might be, the Tylenol dose after the immunization may be even more dangerous, that many of them might either A, forgo the immunization because it's tough to listen to your kid yell and scream in pain, or two, forgo the Tylenol. But again, here's a case of prenatal care. If a woman goes against prenatal care, what's her doctor going to tell her? Oh, take Tylenol for those pains. And what's it going to do for her baby? Make a more difficult child to raise, a child who needs, well, let's just say special assistance. All right. So here we have another one. Early-term births are linked to future early and preterm births. So early-term births are linked to, well, more early-term births. But what's the major cause of early term births? Answer, C-section. Scheduled births. And women whose first birth was early term, as well as those whose first birth was preterm, are more likely to have an early term birth or preterm birth in their second pregnancy. Although the association of prior early term births with subsequent preterm births is less strong, many more women fall in the category, making this an important risk factor for the overall social burden of preterm birth. Now, I really don't like this idea of social burden. The idea that if a lady has a preterm baby or a damaged baby, that it's somehow a social burden. You know, my parents had two mentally retarded children and raised both of them with really little or no involvement of society, if you want to call it that. And one of their mentally retarded children is still living at home, and the other one is living in the community, in, you know, community foster home type situations. So, you know, the idea that there's a big social burden, and because it's a big social burden, a woman should be maybe coerced into submitting to various types of medical intervention is actually unreasonable. But this is what we're taught in medical school. We're taught that, oh, if a child is sick, if a child is ill, then that child becomes a social burden to society. Therefore, because the child becomes a burden to society, society, not the parents, society needs to make the decisions. And what is society? Society is often, unfortunately, a physician following the standard of care. And so with the understanding then that first trimester ultrasounds, frequently ordered by doctors, are tied to autism severity, that pre-labor ruptured membranes, when doctor follows the standard of care and does immediate C-sections, actually makes things worse, that vaginal births are safer than cesarean births, even though one-third of all babies now are born by cesarean section. You know, this is a preponderance of evidence that prenatal care, medical intervention with pregnancy, may not be the best thing. Certainly does not give the optimal outcome. And then we have Tylenol, which is the recommended drug of choice in pregnancy, linked to ADHD and autism. Well, let's just see what the American College of Obstetrics and Gynecology has to say. Let's see how they weigh in on this. Well, this is the obstetric care consensus. That means a bunch of people got together in a room and they agreed on something. Well, let's just see what they agreed on. Safe prevention of the primary cesarean delivery. In other words, they agree that doctors must safely prevent the lady's first cesarean section. And so the abstract is 1 in 3 women who gave birth in the United States did so by cesarean section. And cesarean birth can be life-saving for the fetus, the mother, or both in certain cases. In other words, not very often. However, the rapid increase in cesarean birth rates from 1996 to 2001 without clear evidence of associated decrease in maternal or neonatal harm or death raises significant concern that cesarean delivery is overused. So in other words, the cesarean section rate has skyrocketed, has gone up, but we haven't seen a decrease in maternal death. We haven't seen a decrease in death of the fetus. Now, in order for you to really get a grip on this, because maybe a lot of you have been watching the infant mortality statistics, that infant mortality has been going down, they don't count. An infant is not a fetus. So when a fetus dies, that's not counted infant mortality. The baby has to be born alive and take at least one good breath before the baby can be counted as infant mortality. So if the baby is a stillbirth, if the baby dies during the course of cesarean section, if the baby dies during the course of labor induction, any of these things, then the baby is not counted as infant mortality. And this is how infant mortality rates can go down when there is no decrease in fetal death. In fact, there may even be an increase in fetal death. And so because cesarean section delivery is going up and there is no decline in the death rate of mothers and children, we know that these increased cesarean sections are not benefiting mother or child. So variation in the rates of nulliparous, that means never having had babies before, term, singleton, vertex, cesarean births, these are all adjectives describing an absolutely normal pregnancy, also indicates that clinical practice patterns affect the number of cesarean births performed. The most common indications for primary cesarean section delivery include, in order of frequency, labor dystocia, that means baby's too big, a non-reassuring fetal heart rate tracing, that's what they gave that as the excuse for my delivery, fetal malpresentation, that means a baby is right side up instead of upside down, multiple gestation, that means twins or more, and suspected fetal macrosomia, so they suspect the baby's got a big head or a big body. Safe reduction of the rate of primary cesarean section deliveries will require different approaches for each of these. And so the obstetricians got together and they made a list of all the reasons not to do a cesarean section. Let's take a look. So, reason number one, not to do a cesarean section. So if doctor gives you this reason, then don't go for it. So a prolonged latent phase, so there's 20 hours, should not be an indication for C-section delivery. So if a lady has a prolonged labor, so of 20 hours, no, don't do it. Slow but progressive labor in the first stage of labor should not be a reason for cesarean section. So the first stage of labor is when the cervix opens up to 10 centimeters. And you're saying, if this process is slow, but it's making progress, then that's not a reason for cesarean, just because it's too slow. Cervical dilatation of 6 centimeters should be considered the threshold for the active phase of labor. When we come back, we'll, I don't know if I heard the music. I guess there's no music. So what they're saying is you don't have active labor until the cervix is at least 6 centimeters dilated. Now, that is very, that's about time to come up with that one. Back when I was in training, if the cervix was even 3 centimeters dilated, that was, they started measuring from that point in terms of time to cesarean. And the time to cesarean from that point had to be like 24 hours. And so the standards of active phase progress should not be applied. In other words, you can't start the clock to mandatory C-section until the lady is at least 6 centimeters dilated. And this is a strong recommendation, of course, moderate quality of evidence, which moderate evidence is pretty high evidence standard for most of medical recommendations, since most recommendations have no evidence. So we have got moderate evidence on our side here. Cesarean delivery for active phase arrest, that means the ladies stop progressing in labor, should be reserved for a woman at or beyond 6 centimeters dilation with ruptured membranes who fails to progress despite 4 hours of adequate uterine contractions or 6 hours of oxytocin administration. Now, this is kind of a this sounds reasonable until you realize that most doctors will rupture the patient's membranes at 6 centimeters. And so once you rupture the lady's membranes, then the clock has to start ticking. And so these doctors actually create the emergency that requires a cesarean because they rupture the membranes. And then the second stage of labor, this is the cervix is dilated and the baby is now moving down the canal. And so, oh, this has low quality evidence. We'll skip it. Here's one with moderate quality evidence. Before diagnosing arrest of labor in the second stage, if the maternal and fetal conditions permit, they should do at least 2 hours of pushing if the lady's had a baby prior, or at least 3 hours of pushing if she's never had a baby. This all sounds nice and good until, of course, you've been in labor. Talk more when we get back.
You, your husband, your wife, your children, we all need food. And with dozens of food storage companies buying up airtime all over radio, it's hard for you to know which company you can actually trust. Hey folks, John Stettmiller here. We at RBN understand, which is why I personally searched out a storable food company and one with similar core values to us here at RBN and, of course, you, the listener. Well, I found such a company. I'd like to introduce you to Numana Food Storage. Numana Food Storage, highly nutritious, GMO-free, contains no aspartame, no high fructose corn syrup, has no chemical preservatives or soy, and Numana Food Storage has a 25-year shelf life. To back up my claims, we've made Numana Food Storage the exclusive food sponsor of RBN. Call 888-597-0775, 888-597-0775. Order online at numanarepublic.com. That's NUMANARepublic.com. Food storage you'll love to eat.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AROutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magpul clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AROutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AROutfitting.com.
Do you have difficulty taking supplements? Are you searching for a high-quality, complete nutritional drink that your whole family will love? NutriMedical's Life Support has arrived. All of your daily nutritional requirements in one quick, delicious drink. Dr. Bill Deagle's Life Support is a proprietary blend of vegan protein, activated vitamins, essential minerals, amino acids, probiotics, green tea, digestive enzymes, anti-inflammatories, cancer prevention, detoxification, and much more. Your body will high-five you for this one. Life Support is the best complete nutrition meal replacement on the market. Whether you are an elite athlete, have post-operative challenges, chronic illness, elderly, or a family that just wants a quick, delicious drink, try Dr. Bill Deagle's Life Support for optimized nutrition in one great-tasting smoothie. Just add cold water, almond milk, fruit, or anything else you like. NutriMedical's Life Support. Try our great-tasting chocolate or vanilla today. Call 888-212-8871 or visit us online at NutriMedical.com. NutriMedical.com for the whole family.
Hi, this is Dr. Daniels, and welcome back to Healing with Dr. Daniels. So we're talking about prenatal care and about the C-section it often leads to. And the C-section is so dangerous that it quadruples a woman's chance of dying in childbirth, increases her child's chances of morbidity. In other words, being damaged and needing intensive care. And so it's such a public health issue. The OBGYNs have gotten together to make a list of reasons why no one should have a C-section. And so here they say, well, before diagnosing arrest of labor, that means waving the white flag and declaring a C-section necessary, the woman should be allowed to push at least for 2 hours if she's had babies in the past, or for 3 hours if she's never had a baby. Okay. So I've had a few babies, so I can tell you a little bit about this, in addition to managing a few labors. It's just not necessary to push. The body really does take over. So to push for 2 hours is absolutely outrageous. I think I had my first baby after two pushes. The second baby was a C-section, unnecessary. The third baby I had at home, I might have pushed five pushes. But this is really an automatic process. And this practice of telling women when to push is unnecessary, unhealthy, exhausting, and depletes the poor lady's energy at the end of her labor when she really needs it. And so, really, the body does pretty much all the work, except once the baby gets down the canal and the head starts, you get to see the little scalp there, maybe at that point, but even then, probably not necessary to push. And my first pregnancy, which was a hospital birth, oh my God, the nurses were like, push, push, push. I'm like, oh, come on, just chill, relax. And when you have a lady push, it often just kind of throws things off. And again, depletes the poor lady's energy. When really, she can just take a nap and rest. And when it's time for her to push, her body will wake her up. She'll give two or three good pushes, and that's it. You got a baby. But here they're saying, no, no, we can still go on with our, you know, our little pushing thing. Next, operative vaginal delivery, that's called C-section, in the second stage of labor by experienced and well-trained physicians should be considered safe, acceptable alternative to cesarean delivery. Now they're talking about forceps. And I'll tell you, those forceps, in the second stage of labor, the baby's head is not out yet. I have seen ladies get sliced up so bad with those forceps, it's just ghoulish. But they say, you know what? Better to use the forceps than to use a cesarean delivery.
I saw you there, just standing there. I thought I was only dreaming, yeah. I kissed you then, and then once again.
Hi, my name is Chris. Since the 1970s, I have been actively making products available that support good health. What makes my juices flow is helping mankind get healthy. Today, I'm going to tell you about a product that will help your juices to flow. I am excited to recommend Dr. Miller's Holy Tea to you. Even if we are eating a clean diet, these impurities are entering our bodies. Holy Tea moves these poisons that are creating havoc with our health out of our bowels. It works on the whole digestive system. The five tasty herbs are combined to provide an amazing detoxifying and healing tea that will rid your body of the pollutants and soothe your digestive tract, and in some cases, help you lose weight. It is critical for our health to move all of the environmental toxins from our bodies. The Holy Tea can do that. As a hydrocolon therapist, remember, with every BM, you're supporting RBN. www.holytea.org, 800-326-2001.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.